Hello, and welcome to Lynx River Revisited, the podcast where we rewatch the trailblazing Canadian drama series North of 60, episode by episode, and ask why it is still relevant today.
I'm Mila Nakeko, Decho Dene, Dene Suflene, Muzhai Tanner, and artist.
And I'm Brie O'Keefe, born and raised NWT settler, the meme lord behind Yellowknife memes, and an independent consultant, mostly for Indigenous governments by day. And today we have a guest. I'm really honored to introduce the 8th Premier of the Northwest Territories, as well as the former chief of the Lhtikwe First Nation, also Mila's dad, Jim Antoine. Hi, Jim. How are you today?
I am well, thank you.
Good.
Hi, Dad.
I'm a girl.
We'll be asking why North of 60 is important today, what did they get right, and most importantly, we'll be digging into our own childhoods growing up in a small Decho Dene community. You can watch seasons 1 and 2 of North of 60 on Amazon Prime. All seasons are on APT and Lumi, as well as YouTube.
Are you ready, Mila?
Let's do this.
This episode starts, it's mostly Leon, Rosie, and Lynx River focused. It's a cold open with Sarah and Eric trying to give Leon stitches, and we figure out that Leon has been hit with a cookie jar by Rosie because he was drunk. Peter storms in and asks Leon, how much? And Leon says, $1, cost plus $1. Peter then explains to Eric that in honor of his arrival in town, the bootleggers have put on a sale of cost of liquor plus $1. Normally, they charge about 4 times the prices. And they would have told him that this was about to happen if he had met with the band and had kind of a formal introduction and let the band and the council tell him what was going to happen. We also meet Hannah, who is Michelle's daughter. I don't think we've met her before. And we find out she doesn't like that her mom is a cop. Eric then in the office talks to Michelle about Albert. And Michelle explains that he's a super smart bootlegger. He's had 12 arrests, no convictions. Eric, after speaking with Leon, decides to charge Rosie with assault and get Leon to testify. And he also pulls out massive guns and convinces Michelle to go along on a sting of the bootlegger operation. So they kind of descend this hill, and Eric's doing very serious black ops, and Michelle's literally following him, being like, what is the point? They surprise Albert, but he's super unimpressed, and he points out that he has the Charter of Rights and Freedom signed by Pierre Trudeau on his wall, and nothing he does is going to intimidate him. When Eric's finished the sting, which he tried to do to kind of intimidate the bootleggers, they go back to the cafe, and it's clear that many people are not happy that Rosie is being charged with assault, especially since Leon had been drinking. Council members in the cafe tell Eric about what Lynx River was like before the liquor law. These two particular council members share a really heart-wrenching story about how they were drunk, their house burnt down, and they lost 2 of their 4 children. We also meet Joe Gomba in this episode, who lives outside of town in a camp, and we find out he's ostracized up by the community for putting his foot on the head of a caribou while guiding, and since then the caribou haven't returned to Lynx River. Joe shows Eric where the booze stash is of the bootleggers in the bush to help Leon. Eric arrests the bootleggers and kind of parades them through town, but no one is impressed because they know this won't change anything. Court then arrives and Leon and Rosie have their hearing. Leon doesn't want to testify. The judge, who doesn't want to deal with this and doesn't understand why this charge has been brought, tells them to go to counseling and they'll deal with it next time they're in town. There is a counselor in town, a social worker, Peter's wife Ellen, but she's not around. So Eric and Sarah decide, through their own arrogance, that Sarah's going to try and do counseling. It doesn't work at all. Leon gets heartbroken and he leaves and gets drunk with confiscated alcohol. He's very sick. Sarah pumps his stomach. Rosie shows up and begins to cry, and we realize she still does love him. The episode ends with Eric visiting Joe to tell him what's going on and how Leon is doing. And Joe tells Eric that Leon should go to the drum and that it will heal Leon. And that's episode 2. The big themes in this episode are addiction to alcohol. And I guess I want to ask both of you, like, they talk a lot, really specific, sensational details around drinking hairspray, around glycol. We see Leon take, like, boiling shoe polish to get alcohol from that. And then we hear people really presenting their own stories. Did they get it right? Or would we have told this part of the story differently today?
It was really sensationalized, but I think that's also the style, like, of storytelling in the 90s for Canadian television. Well, for all television, everything was quite sensationalized. I think it was a very important story to show what the problems in a community are and like how they made changes in the community to counter the alcoholism that was happening because they had prohibited alcohol, as the conversation Eric had with the couple at the cafe.
My wife and I, we used to drink. We went to a party one night. We came home and found the house on fire. I had four kids. Two got out. The other two burned to death.
That's why the liquor law is so important to us. We can't go back to those days.
They tried to get it right.
Yeah.
Early 1990s. They tried to portray people from the Decho issues we're dealing with around the day. So I think they tried, and the story is similar. It's not exactly how it was done, but the chief and the people in communities around that time were dealing with very similar issues. So it got that part right, but the exact way they portrayed it. It was for mainly entertainment, I guess, but trying to deal with the issues, the real issues on the show.
Let's talk about Leon and Rosie. And this episode really tries to focus in on their relationship and what they're struggling with, you know, kids and one partner being sober and one partner still struggling with addiction.
She's been through it with Leon. She loves him. And she's just trying to, like, figure out how to maintain her family and also support Leon. Like, they have their issues.
Their portrayal of Leon is actually quite three-dimensional. Like in other shows, I think Leon would have just been shown as being someone drunk, and that would be the only thing about him. But we learn that he can stay sober if he has a job, if he can build, if he can be connected to his culture, making drums. And there isn't enough regular employment for that to be a reality for him. And I think that aspect of storytelling you never would have seen on a show.
And also, like, in the episode, it just shows how in a small remote community, the counselor wasn't in town because they were out getting training. And so there isn't, like, consistent support for people like Leon, who wants to stay sober and is just struggling with consistency of care and connection to his culture.
I put in here, like, should we rename this episode The Caucasity? Because Leon and Rosie, their life isn't perfect, but they're kind of getting along as well as they can. And nobody asked Eric to come in and charge her with assault. So you have this colonial institution coming in, thinking they know best. And then again, there's a culturally appropriate local counselor, which many communities don't have. And they're like, oh, that schedule doesn't quite work. And I mean, yeah, they don't want to keep Leon in jail for ages, but they're like, you, white person, are not trained, but why don't you just try anyways? The utter arrogance of it all is insane. It's done with good intentions, but it doesn't result in good outcomes at all, which I think we're going to see over and over. Jim, you're smiling. You want to say something?
I could see what Leon and Rosie have been going through, because they're trying to portray a situation that is really common around that time. I think it still exists today, where, you know, the whole area of addictions, especially alcohol addictions, now drug addictions is taken over. But there were struggles. I in my own lifetime, I seen all kinds of drama happening, similar to what they try to portray with Leon or Rosie. And it did exist in that time, you know, before Lynx River became a dry community in Fort Simpson in the 70s. When there was highway construction, like, going on, and the Liard Highway, Fort Simpson was wide open. And a lot of people from all the surrounding communities, you work here, and they get paid, and they used to buy cases of beer and bottles of whiskey and each, and this whole town would go on a big roar. And there was all kind of different drama going on, and there were also houses burning down and people perishing and stuff like that, people freezing. So in Lynx River, the chief and them, they put a restriction on there. So it's supposed to be a dry community, but there's bootleggers, which is reality. And Leon can't work and he can't do anything. So And there was a lot of similar cases like that. I think they tried to depict what was going on in the communities, and they got that part right. But they dramatized this whole issue between Leon and Rosie.
Of course. Let's talk then about the bootleggers and about Albert. Albert is, you know, one of the main villains of North of 60, and he's quite a compelling character. He's smart. He's charismatic. He used to be a leader. He used to be chief. I definitely can think of a community that I work with very recently that elected someone who was kind of unofficially known as a bootlegger, and he wasn't chief anymore. And these kind of things are still happening.
Well, Albert Golo is a very interesting character. And as the show goes on throughout seasons, it gets really interesting. So that is a very...
I know, I'm excited.
So this is a really exciting character. And he is very compelling. He's quite charismatic and he's very smart. Eric the cop was like,
well, he's a liar.
Or when he comes to court and he's like, I love to observe theater. I loved that. Like, he's bemused by these colonial institutions that think they know what it's like here. And he kind of defines that he is not ruled by colonial institutions, right? And he's like epitomizing that he is free in his own mind.
Well, Albert is pretty smooth. He kind of controls the community. He knows that people go to him for their addictions. So he more or less runs the underground town. I think it's like that in our communities as well, where they don't run the town, but people know who they are and go to those places where they bootleg. So, and that's the court scene. I know people in town, they may not be bootleggers, but they go to court, you know.
Yes.
Like to watch the drama.
I think one memory I have of Fort Simpson, and I don't think I understood my dad's perspective at the time, but a friend of mine, we might have just been 12. She was babysitting for a family and the parents struggled with addiction and they came home and had a physical scuffle in front of her. And so she was actually brought to court to testify about the assault. And I went with her to support her, age 12. And I don't think I even asked my dad. And when my dad found out about it, he was furious. To me, it was like just a grown-up thing you do to protect your friend or help your friend. And he was like, you should not be exposed to that. He was so mad that I even knew about it, that I went, that I saw this stuff. And I mean, it played out very similarly to this episode. The couple, once they got there, were like, oh, it was just a little thing. I'm not upset about it anymore. And my friend didn't have to testify. But I don't think... As a 12-year-old, I thought I was very grown up, and I don't think I understood my dad's perspective or anger about that. I remember court being quite interesting, too, when I went. So I also love when the judge tells Eric,
jail is a very blunt instrument with which to instill a respect for the law.
If that's even what you're doing. And he makes a good point. I feel like Eric is just trying to prove that he has authority, and he's choosing inopportune ways to do it that aren't smart.
And big city.
Very big city.
Big city.
Yeah.
Like Michelle and him when they were like creeping up to the bootlegger cabin. And she just has like a smirk as he's just like undercover. That was pretty funny. She thought it was really amusing. And she gets to the door, just opens the door.
Exactly. And he's like,
and he just like barges.
Let's talk about Eric, because there's some really good fragile Eric moments. Like he's very upset that everyone in the community wants to talk to Michelle and not him. And, you know, Michelle's like helping Willie get his axe back from Sam, which happened last episode, too. Yeah. And then he gets upset with Peter for walking into the detachment and making coffee.
What is it with you?
What?
Well, do I walk into your office and help myself?
You could, if you're hungry and I got food. I just expect you would help yourself. That's the way we are.
This was a major like culture shock thing for me as well when I moved down south. Like I lived in halls of residence and I realized because I grew up in the north, I did not have normal white person boundaries on helping myself to a cookie or whatever. And some friends of mine got really mad at me.
Well, yeah, he has no idea like culturally what's going on. He was just like knocking on Rosie's doors. And then he's like, why didn't you come to the door? And she's like,
anybody wants to see me, they come in.
And also, he's so suspicious of Joe Gomba.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're RCMP, but he's literally just existing. You don't know if he knows. Like, you just think he looks suspicious.
He's so confused about that. He's so confused about Peter coming into the detachment. It's pretty funny how... And Sam, he was just like...
Why is it they never want to talk to me?
They don't know you.
Yeah.
And then, okay, here's my question. When Eric asks for a cookie from Joe and Joe says no, is it because he asked and he should have just taken it? Or is it because Joe was like, our ways don't apply to you just yet?
That was a different one for me because I think he should have just taken the cookie.
Yeah. Mila, do you agree?
I would have just taken a cookie.
I just would have taken
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's got his fire and his tent. That's his home. As a dene, that's your home, your fireplace. The kunke, you know, your place of the fire. That's your hearth, right? People make reference to that among our culture. And with the cop there, with the RCMP, they portrayed him right because a lot of cops come from the South and other places and they grow up different from us. They grow up with different attitudes and then they come into our communities with their attitudes and they assume that everybody's like them. All the indigenous communities in the North and well, throughout this country, it's totally different from like white culture. But you got to be aware of that. And this whole thing about not meeting with the band council first to get introduced. I was in Fort McPherson one time. There was a big community feast. Place was packed. And the chief, I forgot who the chief was, but the new RCMP members were invited and they were introduced to the community. So I think that's a proper way to do it. Back then in the 90s, there's no such thing as cultural awareness training. And I think every guy needed that before he went into Lynx River.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things I like to highlight is the stuff we see on this show that's still a problem today. I want to talk about Joe Gomba and his backstory. We learn that he's exiled by the community and he lives kind of out on the land because he was a guide for white trophy hunters and he posed with his foot on a caribou head.
Well, there's protocols that we follow as Dene people on our lands. We always respect the animal. What we're taught is that, okay, if you shoot a moose or a caribou, people actually offer tobacco and pray for the spirit of the animal. And as you go, caribou, you never hit it with a stick to kill it, okay? Never. There's a story around here in Tlingit Clan that in the 40s, the Bearland caribou were plentiful. They used to come right to the river close by to Simpson, and people used to hunt it. The story goes is that there was one of our hunters wounded one of the caribous and killed it with a big log, you know, a big stick, club it to death. And all the elders said, no, that's a real no-no. You don't never do that. Since that time, the caribou never came back. So the producers heard some of our stories and maybe there was a takeoff on that one. But we never put our foot on the animal when it's down. We have a lot of respect for the animal. As you're skinning the animal and cutting it up, certain parts of the animals, we hang up in the tree as respect. Like the tip of the heart, there's thing on the stomach. And so we show respect and then we take care of the meat really well too. As for ostracizing somebody for doing that, that's pretty harsh, I think. But I think he's better off living by himself in his tent by his fireplace.
Yeah.
He can think some people's houses that he needs.
Is this your stuff?
Yeah, but it's okay.
It's okay he just wanders into your house and takes stuff?
Yeah.
Thinking that he's stealing.
Yes.
And swap by him.
I loved, speaking of taking really good care of meat, I loved that in Albert's cabin, there's dry meat all around the upper parts. I mean, it looks like Albert Fayley's cabin.
Well, the interior of that cabin was very accurate.
Yes.
Like the wood fire oven, enamel, that was beautiful. And yeah, just the way it is. The old TV and his thugs, his goons playing video games.
I think we learn later some of them are his sons, but I don't know if all of them are his sons.
I like calling them goons.
Goons, yeah. The Golo goons.
Yes.
Well, and also there is a bit of a continuity. We end with the Golo goons in jail, and I don't think that's ever resolved. We never find out. Like, I'm sure they got off, and that's why no one was impressed with Eric's big parade.
Yeah, that was very dramatic. The goons parading all of their liquor through town.
Absolutely. And then Joe's camp is also beautiful, really beautiful. That like tripod, Dutch oven hanging. I mean, it's for TV, but also not completely inaccurate either. Oh, we haven't talked about the weirdest thing where after they sting the Golos, they walk across the river just in their jeans. Why?
And they're just having like this conversation,
really while serious they're political conversation,
like right in the middle of this river.
And their jeans are so wet.
They're so wet.
They probably had to do that for hours.
It must have been so cold.
So cold.
Yeah.
And I get that it probably was the shortest way back to town, but I don't think any of us would do that.
I don't think so.
And it is, for me, like, that is an Alberta Rocky Mountain River. Like, the the scenery is really beautiful. The way they built the community is beautiful. But the river of Lynx River is not a NWT-style river. All our rivers are really big. We would call that a creek.
Yeah.
And it is a creek. It's a creek.
You can't take a boat across.
No. Or a jet boat, like, no. Even. It's, yes. It's pretty shallow.
I think you're deadly.
All right. So, deadly moment of the episode. Mila, what was your deadly moment?
When the court drama of it all, Leon's like, I love you, Rosie. And it actually reminds me of this one night. I live in a neighborhood that kind of is sometimes pretty active at nighttime, especially around 3 to 4. One of my neighbors had an admirer, and about 2:30 in the morning, I get woken up by a man yelling this woman's name. I'll call her Sarah now. And he's like, Sarah, I love you. Sarah, let me see your face. Sarah, I can't go home without seeing you. And like, she throws the window open and she's like, get out of here. What are you doing? And it was this huge, like, beautiful drama. 3 in the morning, woke up the whole neighborhood, and he was just professing his love to her. And she's like, you're drunk, get out of here. And that was like Leon's. Yeah.
It was like, yeah. Leon. Leon is a melodramatic man. In the counseling, when Rosie finally like won't say she loves him, or she's like,
no, I don't.
And he just falls over and slides down the filing cabinet and just lies on the ground and won't get up. I was like, what is that? Like, just, oh, I can't walk anymore. All right, my deadly moment of the day is when Rosie's like,
I hit him, Your Honor, and I'll hit him again, too.
I'll go to jail, all right, and you'll be left with the kid.
Or she's like, you don't hit me because you're chicken. You know I hit you back. I was like, that's not politically correct, no, but I love it.
Yeah.
Jim, do you have a deadly moment of the episode?
I would say right at the end. That was a touching scene there, Rosie going to see him in his health center or where he was out cold there. She was very tender.
Yeah.
Very loving. And the cop and then the nurse there, I guess they kind of look at each other. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was very good.
Yeah, that was.
We always have a Dene Jati word of the episode. Should I let your dad do it this week?
Let's both have them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You mentioned, was it Konda, the hearth earlier?
Kokwe.
Kokwe. Oh, God, that wasn't close at all.
Konke.
Konke. Got it.
Konke. Kon is fire. Ke is place.
Konke.
Fireplace.
That's
the hearth. A lot of elders reference your home as a konke. Use the elders, and then they say, ke, like, where's your wife? And she says, konke theta. She's at the konke.
But that's great. Thank you.
At the beginning of the episode, when Sam is waiting for Michelle to get off the phone, he wanted to ask her about the axe, and then she gets off the phone and she's like, Sam, nea dagondi. And so that's a greeting. And so it's like one of the first things we teach our kids is, and then how we greet each other. So whenever my dad calls, he's like, my girl, nea dagondi.
Nea dagondi.
Konnichiwa. So I'm good.
Nea dagondi.
Nea dagondi.
Nea dagondi. Nea dagondi. Okay, so we have Nea Da Conti and Konk E.
Yep.
All right. I think that just about wraps it up. Is there anything else?
I like to say that in the beginning of this whole North of 60, I was a chief before 1991. And it was a guy in town that was working for us. His name was Wayne Dunn. And he kind of had contacts with the movie, the film stuff. And I think he's the one that triggered this whole thing to start happening, because they base their story on us and the episodes that followed. There were a lot of similarities about how things were unfolding here. So,
but what does it mean to you when you watch this show back?
I was right in the middle of my busy political life back there. So I didn't have very much time to watch TV sometimes. So I knew what was going on, and I know the people who were involved. And occasionally I seen different episodes. I haven't watched every single episode. I just wanted to say that it was a kind of an honor. People back here that watch it, they got a kick out of it. Mm-hmm. The similarities were very similar to everything we're dealing with back then. So
my next question is, it took a lot of trust from a lot of different people in the community to share these stories with the producers. And it worked out really well. Do you think if similar producers came now, that would it take longer? Or would people trust their stories?
I think a lot of people would be open to that. Mm. I think they would like to share all the different drama and all the episodes and all the struggles. All the struggles that we're going through are still all very similar to what we're dealing with back in the 90s. But there's still a lot of drama going on. And the people who are trying to find different ways of dealing with it, I think that's the main story behind it, is that there's different issues, different problems that come up, and you try to deal with them. I think that's basically life. And I think it's portrayed very well for 1990s there, north of 60. I think they did a good job.
I think that it was pretty accurate portraying the issues that we have in our communities of addiction. And like my dad said, we're still struggling with a lot of the same issues today with the introduction of drugs into our communities. There's an epidemic happening, which there's like a very similar theme with this episode that is what is playing out in our communities with the introduction of drugs today. And so, and still having those same issues of consistent care, mental health care, like we don't have like a center for people who want to quit drinking or to quit drugs. And so in a lot of cases, a lot of our people have to go down south, and it's still a big issue.
Well, thank you. Jim, if we would like to have you back sometime, would you come?
Yep, if I have a time.
You're still very busy, but I'm going to say big, big masicho to you, Jim, for coming and speaking about the show, especially since, you know, you were one of the people who advised on it.
Well, there is, as a kid growing up, Dad, one of the things that was like really cool was whenever Tom Jackson used to come and visit and hang out with you for character development.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any stories about Tom for us?
I got lots of stories about Tom.
One of our objectives for sure is to have Tom on the show. And so if he comes.
You should.
Yeah.
That's one thing you have to have. He'll be happy to do it.
Good. We're going to do that. But maybe we'll get you to come. Although then maybe the show will be 4 hours long because you guys will just like start talking and not stop.
Don't ever let anyone tell you your earrings are too big. You don't need that negativity in your life.
Mila, what earrings are you wearing today?
Oh, these are my spooky...
Oh my God, they're amazing.
Skull earrings by The Bead's Knees.
They're great.
East Coast.
I have some sterling silver caribou antler earrings by Matthew Nookingack today. He's based out of Iqaluit. But when I went to visit his studio, just a small diversion, we discovered that when I was in Kikitaldrak at age 4, he was actually a classroom assistant at the elementary school. And so we knew each other then at the same time. You can, if you would like to support the podcast, please like and follow. Leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps. You can email us at linksriverpod@gmail.com. We have an Instagram and Facebook account, Links River Podcast, or Links River Revisited. I'm not sure which one it is. But masicho, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Links River Revisited is hosted by me, Mila Nakeko, and Brie O'Keefe, recorded by Sam Petrie, and edited by AJ Goodwin.
The episodes are recorded in Cabin Radio Studios in beautiful downtown Yellowknife. This episode has been brought to you with support from the NWT Arts Council, Cabin Radio, and Sundog Adventures.